Tango Tango Papa 1698, November 22nd, 2012.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wilser with you, coming to you this evening from Keysby, New Jersey. It is actually, I guess now it would be into Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. the load I had, I don't even remember now where I picked it up at, but I had to come up from... had to come up around Washington, D.C. and go through Baltimore and what have you, and then up the New Jersey Turnpike. And if things would have gone right, I picked it up in, it was in Virginia. Yesterday I picked the load up in Virginia. Well, if things would have gone right, I would have been able to make it up here last night. Tuesday night, and then the original delivery appointment was for 8:30 a.m. Wednesday morning. Well, I ended up getting in the traffic around the west side of Washington, D.C., and of course it wasn't even the day before Thanksgiving yet. It was the evening before the day before Thanksgiving. And, of course, part of it was rush hour, and part of it was just people, lots of traffic out. People kind of leaving early and, wherever they were headed to. So the traffic was just horrific around Washington. It took, extra couple of hours just to get around, maybe go 10 miles, it seemed like. So, and then I got caught in more traffic once I got into Baltimore. And, then after that, went through the tunnel, and a lot of times that, those tunnels, there's several tunnels around Baltimore, but there's this one, one that most of the traffic goes through. Don't remember the name of it. But anyway, oftentimes they'll have a state guy there. I don't know if it's the Department of Transportation or Vehicle Enforcement, or I don't know what the name of it is. Different states have different agencies that handle that. But they'll have a guy there that inspects trucks, and so it was my turn, apparently. So he inspected my truck, which was fine. It passed. Not a problem. The guy was friendly and what have you, and he was doing his parasite job. So in any case... that took some time, and so at that point, by the time he did the inspection, there was no way I could make it. Was running out of time after all those hours in the traffic. So I just after he got done with the inspection, there's a TA truck stop there at Baltimore, and so I just went ahead and parked in there since I knew I could find a place to park there. So that's where I spent the night at, and I let the company know that there's no way that I could make the appointment time, couldn't make it. So then they readjusted it to 3 o'clock this afternoon, or Wednesday afternoon, and so, and I barely was able to make that, even though I left Baltimore early enough where I had a good couple of hours extra to play with. If the traffic would have been normal, I would have gotten there upwards of 2 hours ahead before, maybe around 1 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. But as it was, I got there, it was about three when I got there. So, and then, of course, that place was really backed up, and finally got out of there. I guess it was 10 o'clock, 10:30, something like that, when I finally got away from there. So I'm parked outside of their gate. It's kind of a industrial park type area, side street, and a lot of other trucks are parked here. And so that's where I just was able to park right outside on the street with the other trucks. And so that's where I'm at. And so far they haven't sent any new load, but so it may be an interesting Thanksgiving. If they don't send a load, then I'll probably drive to a truck stop. Probably the easiest one to drive to would be, there's one, about 35 miles from here, 35 miles south, there's a Petro truck stop. And that is probably the easiest one to go to, and probably the restaurant would be open and so on and so forth. Because a lot of times on Thanksgiving you run into the problem of restaurants being closed. And Christmas. That's with a lot of truck stops, those are the only times that they actually close. And or I could just park at one of the service plazas along the turnpike. But I probably go on down, if they don't come up with a load, probably go on down to that Petro truck stop, because there's a truck wash there, and I can, and with this, I definitely got to get the trailer washed out, because when I just glanced in there when I closed the doors a while ago, looks like there's lots and lots of debris in there. So so I may do that. It just kind of depends on what they come up with. So before I go on, I want to talk a bit about GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. When meeting in person, we express so much through the raise of an eyebrow, a nod of agreement. These simple gestures help us communicate more effectively and get things done. But if your team is spread out in different locations, building that connection can be difficult. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. You can meet face-to-face with colleagues and clients no matter where they are. GoToMeeting takes simple online meetings a big step forward with the highest quality HD video conferencing. Build trust, stay focused, turn your business ideas into actions. With one click, you can share your screen to work with others on the same document. It's easy to launch or join a meeting from anywhere using your computer, phone, or tablet. And now you can present from your iPad. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait for the special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and then use the promo code PODCAST. Remember to use the promo code PODCAST. And so that takes care of that. So let me close out of that. So over the past few days, of course, there's been lots and lots going on. It's really quite amazing the pace of things that seem to be happening in the world. And they're not, a lot of them aren't good. They really, you see what's going on in the Middle East, and that, that conflict, of course, has been around forever, and it has been kind of emboldened due to our weakness, the United States of America. We have become a very weak nation. And I know a lot of people want to blame the administration. They want to blame Obama and blame the Democrats. And we're putting, that's misplaced blame. Because, we can see what they're doing wrong. Oh, look what they're doing wrong. But it's kind of like you see someone else's faults. You can always see their faults, but you can never see your own. And, of course, people won't look at their own faults. They'll look at other people's faults, and then they kind of feel justified. Find someone that's worse than you are, then you feel better about yourself. And that's what we do. We have that tendency to do that. And so we have a tendency, the tendency is to never look at ourselves. And the solution to the problem is always to begin with yourself. The United States has become weak, not because of the Obama administration, not because of the Democrats, but because we have really bad morals, and they've been sliding for a long time. The morals have gone right into the toilet for various reasons, and we, you know, weak nation, then you end up that, you know, that conflict in the Middle East is blowing up. And so that's going on. And then of course there's a lot of news stories about how our own economy is kind of faltering and continuing to falter, and it's going to. Things are going to get a lot worse than they are. You know, of course, this Hostess food things has been in the news, and you know, you had this company that we just kind of ignore. We've ignored it. Of course, in most places, most truck stops, most are just virtually, you go in virtually any convenience store and there's Hostess products, or there has been. There still are. There's still some that, you know, they haven't gone away completely. That, you know, they'll eventually completely sell out. And of course, other companies are there to fill the void. They have competition. Probably one of the biggest ones is a company called Little Debbie that has a very similar line of products, extremely similar snack type stuff. But the Hostess stuff is there, and so is the Little Debbie, and you know, but we just kind of, you know, it's there. So there's really no reason why Hostess would fail as a company, apart from the fact that it's dysfunctional. Now, you know, we can argue, well, why is it dysfunctional? Well, ostensibly, there was a union problem. The union wouldn't take a pay cut. And I don't know, I really don't know the history. I know that Hostess has been through bankruptcy at least once or probably twice. And they told the union, you have to accept this pay cut or we're going to go out of business. You know, because they can't, you know, the bottom line is they can't manufacture money. A company like Hostess gets it, like all companies do. They're getting their money from their customers. You know, they get the money. They're producing a product that the customer wants. You know, whether it's Twinkies or, of course, that's the thing that people have been making the jokes about, the Twinkies. But you have the fruit pies, and they had a number of other products. I never was a big Twinkie fan, but probably the only product that I ever bought occasionally that was a Hostess product would be the, you know, different types of fruit pies. But of course, as I say, there's competition for that. Little Debbie's got fruit pies as well, so you know, the fruit pie isn't going to go away. The particular Twinkie thing, I never really was a fan of those. Of course, I've eaten them in the past, but, long time ago, but I'm just not, I just never really, was a fan of that. If I was going to get anything, it might be a fruit pie. And I don't even really care what brand it is. if that's what I'm going to get, that's what I'm going to get. So, the union, they were told, we're going to go out of business. You either, we can't. This is the only option. We've got to cut our costs. And the union voted, well, no, we're not going to take a pay cut. So now they're going to get a 100% pay cut. And 18,000 people across the country are losing their jobs. And now, you know, I looked it up, Hostess, and I didn't realize there's this company called Interstate Bakeries. And I saw that, you know, like in Wikipedia or whatever, I saw that and it says Interstate Bakeries, with a Hostess brand. And, you know, I realized Interstate Bakeries is actually one of our customers. There's a number of times that I've hauled Interstate Bakery loads, and you know, and they're all over the country. They're like in 30 states. So it's actually Interstate Bakeries that is going down the drain, and that has gone down the drain. And there's really no reason, because the products, other than the fact that the company's dysfunctional. Now, I believe, it's my belief that unions, as a rule, unions help to enshrine dysfunction in companies. Whether, you know, and certainly if it's in the government, you know, some kind of government employee union, that enshrines a dysfunction. That's really what it does. It ends up enshrining dysfunction. You know, it just depends. Again, it kind of depends really on the people that are involved, and whether it's the management or the unions or whoever, and of course the unions, the employees, whether they have a union or not, make up the company along with the management. It's not all, you know, it's not all one-sided, and they're not just workers or whatever. It's not just management. The entire thing makes up the company, and you have varying degrees of dysfunction, and Hostess became, for whatever reason, it's been dysfunctional for a while. Like, you know, of course, it went the bankruptcy. If you think about it, bankruptcy is a process that can help a dysfunctional company become functional again, and sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And in the case of Hostess, it didn't. But the problem, unions kind of enshrine dysfunction. And that's why I would much rather be in a kind of a non-union type of situation where I work for an employer that's completely at will, and we all just sort of rely on our goodwill to keep the company going. And I prefer that type of situation. I really do. I really prefer that kind of situation, because then you end up with, or at least I end up with, kind of working in with an organization of like-minded people where we all kind of think the same way. You know, we're all doing our job not because we have to, but because, ideally, because we want to do a good job and serve the customer and keep the company's costs down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and not see it as an adversary. And of course, you know, the problem with unions is it encourages groupthink. And anytime you encourage groupthink, the chances of encouraging the wrong kind of groupthink, the bad groupthink gets encouraged. In other words, resentment ends up being enshrined, and I don't want to be a part of any kind of organization or any kind of group that of people. I don't want to tie my future to a group of people that, you know, where it's kind of based around resentment. That's a bad thing. But it doesn't even take a labor union to do that. It could be a church. It could be a church. You know, it's dangerous to, you know, you've got to be careful with your associations with people and your associations with group, because if the group offers you approval, especially if it, you know, it offers your approval for the rotten side of your ego, whether it's a union, it could be a labor union, or it could be a church, it could be your local church that you all to get together and you smile at each other and you sing song and so on and so forth, and in the meantime you're all, it's just veneer on rot. The preacher's a paid whore, you know, smiling at you, making you feel better about yourself, your rotten self. And that can happen. It can happen incredibly easily. So dangerous stuff. So I would rather, you know, I'm always kind of keenly aware of, you know, when I'm dealing with people, I'm kind of keenly aware of, my own behavior, my own motivation, et cetera, because that's what I have to watch, is my own motivation. It's, you know, I can look at the motivation of others and I can see problems, but the thing that I've got, you know, the one thing I have control over and that I can, you know, is, my own behavior, or, you know, I have a, you know, I can look at my own behavior. If I'm willing to look at my own behavior, good or bad, especially for the, you know, look for the bad stuff, look for bad patterns, and, you know, in my interaction with other people, that's the one thing I can do. That's the one thing I have control over. And, or at least I've got a, I potentially have awareness of that if I allow that. So hostess, you know, gone. And, it's, you know, it's too bad, but, on the other hand, it's dysfunction. And, as I say, there's plenty of dysfunction to go around, but if, you know, there's a tendency for, if, you know, with companies that have unions, there is a tendency for that dysfunction to become enshrined. And, now it dysfunction can be enshrined in management as well, but, it, you know, if there's a labor union involved, then, you know, tendency there is greater. You know, you have a greater chance for dysfunction, company dysfunction, to become enshrined, and you know. So there, but there's a perfect example of you know, what I'm talking about. The dysfunction was enshrined in the union and the employees, and it ended up in the end proving to be too great, and now the company's gone and all those jobs are gone, and the thing kind of falls apart, and the competition is there. There's plenty of competition to kind of pick up the pieces. You know, there's no lack of there's no lack of those kind of snacks. You know, you go into any convenience store, or, you know, or other types of stores, but certainly convenience stores, and those kind of snacks are still around, readily available. You can be as fat as you want. So, and I eat those kind of things once in a while. I really try to limit it. I do try to limit it, but, you know, I will, you know, kind of eat those things once in a while. So, but I guess they serve their purpose. But so anyway, the as I say, there's a lot of, you know, things are bad, a lot of bad things going on, lots and lots of dysfunction, and it's kind of careening out of control at this point. Really is careening out of control. And as I've said, you know, I've said many times, at this point, there it's, you know, it's going to get way worse before it gets better. and it's really careening out of control. And I think we're as we become more and more and more dysfunctional, as the numbers of dysfunctional people increase, it's kind of ever increasing, it's going to get it's going to put everyone, it's going to put us to the test. And so if you resent the, if you have resentment of any kind, let's see if I can put it this way. If you have a resentment of any kind, then the dysfunction on the outside is kind of like a tuning fork. You see the giant dysfunction going on the outside, and you may well end up in economic hardship, really, like we've never faced before. And if you have any resentment at all, it's like a giant, you know, it's like a giant tuning fork, you know, and the smaller tuning fork sort of vibrates into sympathy with it. And, you know, so you got to get rid of your own resentment, you know, and then the idea, you know, people have this idea that a little bit of resentment is okay, and it's okay to just, whether you're aware of it or not, you know, because a lot of, you know, resentment comes packaged with its own denial, animosity comes packaged with its own denial, and it's easy to kind of just, you know, kind of, it's there, and you kind of maybe deny that it's there, but you sort of enjoy it, sort of enjoy judging other people, seeing other people's faults, you know, and of course, in the back of your own mind, I'm really a good person. Look how bad they are. Point your finger. I'm really good compared to that. So, as things fall apart, and they're going to, you know, if they haven't already, they will. As they get worse, if you've got resentment, if you have animosity, you're in big trouble. You're going to be, if you think you're miserable now, just wait. As I've said many times, you know, we live in a world that, you know, our lives, most of our lives have just been unbelievably soft and easy compared to what they could be. We've had very easy lives, very, you know, very soft lives. Really very few hardships, you know, compared to what real hardships could be. And we just don't have a clue. We really don't have a clue as to how bad things can be. We're about to find out. If we haven't already found out, a lot of people are finding out, but it's going to get much worse. And you know, but there's this idea that you can resent, or you know, you resent someone else's dysfunction. You resent the dysfunction, thinking somehow that resentment is a protection. Of course, it's exactly the wrong. It's exactly the opposite. It invites it in. It causes you to become externalized. And it literally forces you to care, whether you want to or not. But one of the ways, you know, I've had people ask me before, well, how do you let go of it? You know, I see that I have resentment, but I can't let go of it. Well, one of the ways you can, you know, can you, let's say there's an asteroid that's Let's say it's headed for Earth, and there might be. There may be an asteroid with our name on it. You know, and it's headed the way that it's headed. And is there, would it make sense to resent the asteroid because it's on a certain trajectory? And the Earth is on its trajectory. Would it make sense to resent that? Does that make any sense? Because, you know, an asteroid, you know, if something's traveling through space on a trajectory, has a velocity, it's on a trajectory, and it can't deviate from that unless some other outside force influences it. It literally cannot deviate from that. So how could you resent it? So in the same way, all who sin are slaves. And that literally is true. It literally is true. So therefore, you know, you see people, you know, doing injustice, people being dysfunctional. And you think somehow you can resent them and, you know, you resent them and it somehow justifies you. But if you can see that they are enslaved, they have to be what they are. They don't have a choice. That's the lie. We all lie to ourselves that we have a choice. And of course you don't. All who sin are slaves. There is no choice. You know, I was thinking today, you know, if you have, you know, and of course I'm not a parent, never have been, never will be, but, you know, looking at that objectively, you know, and I've seen it happen many times, people will have their kids. You know, and then the parent, you know, maybe the dad, maybe the mom, will start, you know, calling the kids stupid and calling them names. What's that about? Why? What would cause you, as a parent, to call your child a name, to torment them, to terrorize them, to bully them? What would cause you to do that? You think, oh, well, they're doing that on purpose. Well, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I contend that they're enslaved. They can't stop themselves. Now, they may think, oh, I'm just teasing or whatever, but really, they're just making excuses. They have no free will. They're doing it because they're slaves. They're doing it, they have to. They don't have a choice. So, you know, let's say you resent your parents. And, of course, we all end up resenting our parents because they're typically the first people that we deal with. And you can resent a parent that's not there, that you don't even know who it is. You can resent that. You know, you can resent anything. People, places, and things. Relationships. If you can realize that slavery means exactly what it is, you are a slave. You cannot stop yourself. People cannot, that are doing bad things, cannot stop themselves. So all of the dysfunction that we see around us and the resulting destruction, we cannot, you know, these people cannot stop themselves. They're like an asteroid on a trajectory. And so therefore, it's stupid to resent them or to resent the destruction, resent what happens. The asteroid's on this trajectory and it impacts, you know, it crashes into the Earth and causes, wreaks havoc. It makes no sense to resent it. Now, when you resent people, you resent injustice. You know, someone does some injustice to you and you resent it. The resentment sort of ends up justifying it. It's kind of a strange thing that happens, but it sort of ends up justifying it to the person that's doing the, it ends up helping the person that is the perpetrator of the injustice. It enables them to remain in their denial. And the only way that, you know, that you can introduce another element to that, unless, you know, of course, you can become a bigger bully. That's one choice. You either, you know, you're either a wimp or you end up becoming a bigger bully and switch roles. But the way out of the problem, the only real way out, is to learn not to resent. And then when the person does the injustice, whenever the person, you know, tries to, you know, perpetrate injustice on you, and of course they will, because they have to, they're enslaved to it. If you don't resent, if they can see that you don't have any animosity towards them as they perpetrate their injustice, it forces them to become conscious whether they want to or not. It forces them to become conscious of what they're doing. And oftentimes that'll end up putting a dead stop to the injustice. The person will run away, you know, they become frightened and they'll run away and find some other victim. But regardless of what happens to you, whether you have to suffer whatever hardship you suffer, if you can suffer it without animosity, it ends up changing the experience. You know, and I can't really even quite describe what that means, but it's kind of like you're in the experience, but somehow you're not. You're sort of separated from it, like you're looking at it from a million miles away. And it really is. It's in the world, but not of it. So you're in the world, you know, your body's in the world, you know, experiencing whatever it experiences, but your identity isn't affected. Your identity, who you are as a person, is protected. It's coming from a different place. But if you resent, you lose your identity. You lose control over where your identity comes from. It's kind of another way of putting it. Now, some people enjoy that. They enjoy becoming externalized. They get something out of it. for me, that was agony. Absolute agony. Taking on an externalized identity is sort of like a little taste of hell, at least for me. So, anyway, Michael Moss sent another piece of feedback, and this one is about 14 minutes and 20 seconds long, and I have no idea, I haven't played it, so we're going to be listening to get this together, so I may end up doing a stop and start on it. So here is Michael Moss.
Hey Tom, Michael Moss here, feeding back on the feedback show that you answered my feedback on your show, and I'm going to follow up here with some more feedback to the feedback. If y'all followed that, you find me on the web, of course, at feeds.feedburner.com/mossgrowth, or you can send me feedback or correspond with me at mossgrowth@gmail.com. I'm also on iTunes under the Moss Growth Podcast. Now, one thing that you made here in your comments about parents getting involved. That's, nothing could be more right. It should not matter what, you know, private, public, you know, or anything. The parents should be involved in their kids' education and their future, for that matter, because that is a big part of their future, without question. We come across too many parents that do the exact opposite. They want the schools to raise their kid. This happens in the private and the public schools both. As I told you, my wife has worked in both of those type of schools and seen it happen, where the parents essentially want the teachers to babysit them. And if they're getting bad grades, well, it's not their fault. It has to be the teacher's fault. Used to be back in the day, it used to be the exact opposite. Kids' grades were bad. Oh boy, the kids couldn't get two words in edgewise once the parents and the teachers got together. The teacher was right; they proved it and everything. Nowadays, there's so much red tape when it comes to that that you have to be a really persistent parent to, in either type of school system, to get to the bottom of it, because if you don't, too many parents do the exact opposite. Well, it's just the teacher's fault now. It's all their fault, you know, because we have to pay all this money. And of course, both private schools and public schools are expensive these days. I have one kid who's just her books alone were over $300 this year. Expensive. That's a lot of money for stuff that you won't even keep. It's stuff that you have to give back. It's basically rental. Stuff's getting high priced. Now, of course, there's people talking about, you know, putting more iPads in schools and the like. Well, it's a digital age. I don't see a problem with that. It may, in the long run, it may actually save money. But they need to be provided, or have where the parents at least pay, you know, some type of fee, you know, unless the kids have their own. Which, of course, is fair as well, if you're able to buy one. I mean, usually you can find one pretty cheap if you look around. But to get back at the topic at hand here, the one of the sole issues of why kids are failing is because their parents are not involved, and frankly, they're kind of led to, it's okay. You know, these teachers really don't care about our kids, you know, because they're not getting raises, and some of them are being graded now, so they really don't care as much, which maybe to a degree that's true. But, you know, when you have a school, a society set up to where it's okay if you fail, there's options. You can even drop out and get your GED. In some cases, they can even work some jobs without even a GED. And these kids get smart in this age where they can go to the internet and look stuff up for themselves. They come out and say, what's the point of school? Which, you know, obviously, the social aspect is important. So is the curriculum aspect. Because, yeah, you may be able to get work without a GED, even without a GED, but you ain't going to have a very good job unless you're doing something that's illegal, such as prostitution or drug dealing or something like that, unless you're really good at an online trade. But again, if you don't have the basic essential skills from school, just from up to high school, you know, implanted it in your brain, it's going to be kind of difficult to understand how to do some of this stuff. A lot of times, people end up kind of feeding off their peers. And usually, you know, the old tear in a beer syndrome, you know, like minds find each other. It's usually a collective tear in a beer, woe is me type thing. It's not very good. It's not a very bright future. So I will agree with you on that one, that parent interaction is vital. It's absolutely vital for your kids to be successful in school and in their lives, for that matter. Now, you also mentioned in that comment about the election. You're not telling people who, you're not even going to tell people who or who not to vote for, which that's fine, obviously. I will say this. You know, back in 2008 and even in this election, the Obama mantra is change. Change, change, change. But here's what I've come to discover. There's people that have been running in the presidency on independent candidates or even not even on a ballot. Ron Paul is the one that I mentioned right off the bat. And by the way, this was the first election ever I wrote in a president for candidate ever. And it was Ron Paul. Ron Paul would have brought change. This actual change that Obama's been talking about for years. But the problem is, can America even handle change?
Well, let me interrupt. What I've come to realize, you know, as I've said, we like to blame the politicians, and we think, well, if we could just get, you know, this politician in there, or Ron Paul would have been, you know, he'd been great, but would we put up with it as a collective? No, not the way we are now. We wouldn't put up with it. You know, people, you know, Ron Paul started doing his Ron Paul stuff. You know, the real libertarian type agenda. Do you think people would put, you know, the parasite people would put up with that? I don't think so. And there's a lot of people that maybe aren't outright parasites that wouldn't put up with it. We have become rotten as a people. That is the real problem. And unless and until we are willing to see that and do something about it ourselves, you know, look at ourselves and look at our own morals and so on and so forth, nothing's going to change. It's just going to keep getting worse. There is no political solution. There are only political problems. And the political problems simply reflect our moral failings. And it becomes more and more and more and more dysfunctional. And that's all I... At the present time, that's all I see. is increasing amounts of dysfunction, and it can get bad. Think it's bad now, just wait. It's going to get a whole lot worse. So, you know, but we have this idea that, somehow politics is going to solve it, and it's not. And I think, you know, if nothing else, this most recent presidential election should prove that to us. There is not a political solution. And, you know, of course you say, well, change. Well, that's meaningless. You know, and maybe to the parasite type of people, it just means, oh, well, that means that somebody else is going to pay my way. By the way, I just, Glenn Beck has a new book out, and I got the audiobook, and I was able to listen to all of it yesterday. The book is called Agenda 21. It's based on there's a United Nations, thing, you know, this thing that's been around called Agenda 21, and it's in every local community has been enacting this stuff. And so, and Agenda 21 is right on the UN website. You know, there's all of these papers about what it is and so on and how to implement it and what have you. And so Glenn Beck wrote a novel about Agenda 21, and it's about an 8.5-hour audiobook. Really quite a good story, but it's basically kind of takes all the Agenda 21 stuff to the extreme. And so you have these, this group of people that were relocated to like a collective like a planned community. They were forcibly relocated into this kind of a communistic planned community, commune type of thing, and, you know, where they're, you know, and it's really, you know, whether you want to believe the Agenda 21 stuff or not, this really sort of explores the themes of collectivism and how bad it is and what a living hell it is. And you think, oh, that can't happen. Well, all you got to do is read accounts of people that have lived under collectivism, you know, under real communism. Read their stories. And there's plenty of them. There's plenty of them out there to read. All you have to do is just, you know, read those stories. You know, read stories about somebody. Let's say somebody that lived in East Germany when it was was under communism, before the Berlin Wall fell, and Germany was reunited. Read those stories and then simply substitute some, you know, like the Agenda 21 ideas, you know, about worshiping the earth and so, and, you know, and animal, protect the animals, protect the environment type stuff. It's basically collectivism, you know, and it's complete, you know, totalitarian state type stuff. That's exactly where we're headed. But it's not, again, what enables that to happen. It's not the politicians. It's not their fault. You know, we think, oh, it's the politicians. It's our fault. It's our moral failing that is at the root of the problem. We are the problem. Not, you know, the problems are not external. The problem is internal. So, anyway, that Agenda 21 by Glenn Beck, great book. Really enjoyed it, and of course, at at the end of it, they actually tell you what is real. You know, the actual Agenda 21 stuff. What is actually being implemented right now, and being pushed right now versus. You know, what's real and, you know, what's a real policy and what isn't, you know, what, you know, what's kind of projected in the story. But, really enjoyed the book, and it really really does kind of demonstrate what a hellish life it would be living in that kind of it's sort of a world where externalized identity is kind of forced on you and it's taken to the extreme. And that's really what collectivism is.
Because we have been riding the Republican and Democrat mantras for so long. And really, there's not all that much difference between the two of them, in my honest opinion. There's very little. There's some subtle differences, but most they're just... You know, people say vote for the lesser of two evils because they're both, and in my mind, I think they both have serious problems. And they're not moving the country in any real direction. To move the country in a real direction, you have to have change.
Well, let me interrupt. That's where we're looking at it the wrong way. We're not going to move the country by it's not political. There is no political solution. There's only political dysfunction. Politics kind of arises to fill the vacuum of our morals. So it sort of arises to fill our moral problems, our moral vacuum. You know, nature abhors a vacuum. And if we're not self-guided and self-directing, then politics kind of becomes an externalized force. But ultimately, you know, it ends up becoming increasingly evil and totalitarian. And so that's where we're headed. The only way out of it is for us to get our morals back.
Drastic change. A lot of things have to be given up. A lot of changes in policies and procedures have to be made. Everything has to be revamped. It's like revamping an NFL football team that's been dismal for years and now they're trying to win. They get rid of the dead weight. They get rid of the things that don't work and they try things that are completely different. And I think Ron Paul and his administration could have done that. But could America have handled it? I don't think we're ready for it. And it's a sad thing because we're at a tipping point, obviously. As you mentioned, going over a cliff. And we've got to make some drastic changes. We can't just keep doing what we've been doing. It's proven it will not work. And until we take that leap of faith... I mean, things do look pretty dismal, but the thing of it is, it's still within our control to right the ship. But I just don't think America's ready to make those drastic changes. All right, and then finally, you know, talking about basically, in this case, this may have hurt my feelings. You know, how can words, a series of sounds, actually hurt somebody? To a degree, I understand what you're saying because it is just noise. But at the same time, even though it's a series of noise, we know what it means. And the word love is a very emotional word. It cuts right to the heart of who we are. And so when I hear you make the comments about...
Let me interrupt. What is love? Do you love God the same way that you love ice cream? Or that you love your ho-ho? Or you love your Twinkie? Or you love your fruit pie? Your Hostess fruit pie. You know, the problem with the word love, at least in English, is that there's only one word. you know, I think, what is it, the Greek, there was like, I can't remember now, there was either 7 or 11 different words for the word love. Like eros is one of them, and that's, I think that's the basis of our word erotic. So you had erotic love, and agape is another one, I think, having to do with loving God, so on and so forth. And I think there was seven different words for the word love in Greek, whereas in English it's just one. And so when I say the word love, I don't mean in a sense kissy kissy huggy huggy or having an emotional attachment. I think real love is not emotional. I don't see it as being emotional. Now, you know, other people it may be impossible. It probably is impossible for me to really explain the meaning of that. But I don't see, you know, say, for example, loving God or God loving us, I don't see that as it's not an emotional thing. Do you think God has emotional attachments to human beings? The way, you know, the kind of the way we have it, you know, we end up with emotional attachments, you know, positive and negative, you know, kind of love-hate type emotional attachments. Do you think God has love-hate towards human beings? I don't think so. So my opinion, kind of a godly type of love really has no emotion attached. There's really no emotion. It's not an emotional type of thing. So when I say, you know, does a parent love their child? Well, you know, you could argue. My mom, for example, would, you know, she thinks that it means that she's going to offer money. Doesn't want to see her kids suffer. And I can understand that. Doesn't, you know, I can understand somebody not wanting to see their kids suffer, and so they offer them money. Here, I bail you out of this, bail you out of that. Well, the problem is that it destroys them. That kind of thing can end up destroying the kid easily. Rather than allowing them to fail, to sort of interact with the world on their own and have sort of engage in their own dysfunction and suffer the consequences of it. And then they find out, oh, that was dysfunctional, let's change the equation. You know, so I can see, so in other words, I can see how a parent, it would be a temptation to sort of prevent your child from suffering the consequences of the child's dysfunction. You know, the child has this dysfunction, and the parent rushes in and prevents them from suffering the consequence, and it just makes the dysfunction worse, because then the feedback mechanism's taken away. In fact, it's, you know, they engage in the dysfunctional behavior, and then the feedback mechanism, oh, well, you get rewarded for it. Parent saves you. Government saves you. That's not love. So when I say the word love, I'm not talking about kissy kissy huggy huggy or emotional attachment type of love. And that's kind of a limitation of the English language, at least for the word love.
About if you send your kids to the cesspool called the public school system, you don't love your kids. And you know, so there's a lot of things that can roll off my back, and I really don't care. But when it comes to loving my kids, something that I am. And my wife both are very high on, and we feverishly live and breathe every day of our life. What our children, they are so precious to us. But just because we send them to a public school saying we don't love them, that's where I made the comment. And I wholeheartedly disagree. And we can agree to disagree upon that. Because I know we love them. and they know we love them. So, but I'm willing to bet that there's others out there who do send their kids to a public school. And love their kids dearly. Maybe the point that you're getting at is what they're getting sent into that they shouldn't be sent into. These places have gotten bad as they have. And to that I would say, well, you could say that about both. But then at the same time, if you're homeschooling, where's the social aspect of their lives? Because we're social beings. And we need other people to a degree. Now, I'm not saying it's a life or death situation, we don't see somebody for a while. But it's our very nature. We're very social beings. And we need at least some contact. And if they're only being homeschooled, I just really wonder, unless it's via online, how much social interaction a kid can really get. Because it is so vitally important for us as social beings to have a sociability about us. At any level, even if it's introverted or extroverted or whatever. But it's not perfect. It never has been perfect. It never will be perfect. Neither is the world. And sometimes we have to face the fact that we can't shelter them forever, no matter how hard we try, and that they're going to have to go out there into that world and they're going to have to see and hear and experience things that are not going to be pleasant. And in some cases, just flat out deplorable. If we learn from it, move on. Hopefully it makes us stronger in the end. Again, you can find me on the web at feeds.feebiter.com/mossgrowth. Also, Moss Growth Podcast on iTunes. You can send me email feedback at mossgrowth@gmail.com. And thanks again, Tom. Look forward to hearing from you again.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to cut this off, see if I can get headed to bed. I was able to sleep. I did lay down, and I'm pretty sure I slept while I was waiting for the load to get unloaded. After I got it backed into the door, I did sleep, and so, but I can probably sleep again, hopefully. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week. Hope you have a good Thanksgiving if you're in the United States. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.